What time do we have here?
I think we have 5:30.
Have you heard anything from Councilmember Abdi that he was going to be late at all?
I have not.
Okay, so we can start a meeting with two council members. We do have a quorum. So I will call this meeting to order. It's the Community Services and Safety meeting, Monday, February 14th. Happy Valentine's Day. I am Kathy, joining with me is Tosh Sharp, council member. And welcome, council member Mohammed Abdi. Welcome to the meeting. I see you here.
Hello there.
Great. So we will start. We have four items on the agenda today. We're going to try to get through all of them in about an hour and a little bit. And so we will start with item 1A, which is a grant agreement for the Summer Experiences and Enrichments for Kids Fund. And this one, the ask was going to be to four meetings consent agenda. So it won't be discussed during the COW, so let's have a good discussion now, and then I'll report on it during reports tonight. And all right, so we have John Dunn with us. And could you turn your camera off just for now until we come to your item? Thank you. Welcome, Katrina. Okay, John.
Good evening. How are you doing today?
Excellent.
Good. All right. I'm bringing this item to committee tonight. This is a reimbursement grant that the Parks and Recreation Department has been awarded. The purpose of this grant is we were able to apply for three different areas, and we were awarded in all three. And the three areas that we focused in on were a summer scholarship program, so we can directly scholarship youth ages kindergarten through 12th grade into our activities. The second area is we're creating a new outdoor recreation program with this grant. And then the third area is a youth ecology and restoration stewards program. And so the memo has the breakdown of those pricing for each area. Again, this is a reimbursement grant, so there'll be a net zero effect on the budget, but it will require an end of year adjustment by finance to both the revenue and the expense side for that grant. And I am happy to answer any questions you may have about the grant.
All right, I'll start with Council Member Abdi. Do you have any questions about this grant?
At this time, I don't. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Council Member Sharp.
Yeah, there's some basic questions that I have about this. Is this program available every year, or is this a one-year thing and you try for it again?
So it was originally we actually last summer were awarded a small grant that we had access to, and we were able to use it towards some of our summer camps. This year, it's will be the final year that we know of. There is no plan at this point in time for it to be continued.
Okay. And then, who actually runs the program?
The grant program or our program?
You're requesting money, and so this is like summer events. So who actually is tasked with receiving the money and then running this program? Program.
Got it. So the way it works out is the outdoor recreation program is going to be run by the Parks and Rec Department, specifically recreation. We are actually working on hiring an extra labor staff to help develop and run the program during the summer. So I'll have oversight from full-time staff, but run with extra labor, and the extra labor is all built into the grant itself to pay for itself. The scholarship program will be run by recreation staff, and it'll be good for all the different recreation programs that we offer, which are run by various staff. The Youth Ecology and Restoration Stewards Program will be run by Olena Perry, who's part of the Parks Department. And she'll be coordinating with two agencies providing the services for the training for the youth.
Okay. And then how do you pick the kids that get to go? How's that determined?
So the idea is the scholarship program will be based off of need. And we, as you know, as you see in the grant, we have $100,000. So we can be very, we can be very open with that scholarship. So we're looking for Tukwila youth that are in need that we can provide those scholarships for. The outdoor program, again, it's we're going to focus in on Tukwila kids. The way we have right now, we estimated that we can handle between 16 and 32 kids per trip, depending on the trip and the excursion. And those will be a combination of direct marketing and outreach to different groups to anyone that we can contact. And that one's going to be more of an individual activity. So it's not like one person signs up for every single event. We are looking at it as, okay, I'm going to try rafting this week, and next week I might try the high ropes course. And somebody else was like, oh, this week I want to do the kayaking trip and a different one. So it's going to be more of an individual type of events.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to get at is how does a kid, what I don't want or wouldn't like to see is like only a handful of kids from a particular neighborhood or have connections with the city can get access to these programs. So how does your group determine which kids can go to this thing? Because there are some kids that might have an in, let's say, like, because they know about it, and so some kids are not able to go because they don't know about it, or like, who picks? Like, how do you pick this kid versus that kid? If you get to 32, and let's say you have 35 kids that apply, how do you determine? Is it first come, first serve? Is how is those kids picked?
It will probably start out as first come, first serve. However, the nice thing with this grant is it is a pretty large chunk that we can work with. We can look at it, just like other programs, if there's opportunities to expand, we will.
Okay. So it just, I guess your staff picks the first come, first serve. If the kids who are in the know,
picking, they register. So it's not like we're going to be like, okay, you're not going to be able to go, you're going to go. They will contact us to register for that.
Okay. Let me rephrase. If my kid knows about it, like he's in the know, he'll get first opportunity because he submitted his application first. And that goes for the first 16, or if there's the first 32. Whoever gets there first gets to do these programs.
I see a hand up from Tracy Galloway. Would you please tell us what you know and what you can enlighten us with? Thank you.
Sure. I just wanted to kind of help support the conversation. Good evening, for the record, Tracy Galloway, Parks and Recreation Director. With all of our programs, they are open enrollment, so it is generally on a first-come, first-served basis. We have been doing a lot of outreach work over the last several years to make sure that all of these opportunities are promoted through various channels, through multilingual flyers. So we really work hard to try to get the word out and ensure that these opportunities are well known in the community. And then as people come to us, we want to make sure that they know that if they can't afford these programs, we have resources available to help eliminate some of those barriers. So I think that's what John was kind of referring to with the scholarship program. We can utilize those funds to reduce those barriers. We can use funds to help promote it in multiple languages and through different means. We use lots of different ways to get the word out. We use a lot of electronic means. We use signs. We use flyers. We work with different neighborhood groups and organizations that are active in the community. So we'll use all those channels to do our best to get the word out.
So is this, this is brought to the school district and they're the ones who kind of push the program out to the kids, right? Are they, do they get an opportunity to do that?
Yeah, we often work with the schools to help push out these opportunities. And just as a point of clarification, so this program is funded by through ARPA funds, but they came to us through OSPI and through the Washington Recreation and Parks Association. That's why it's a limited year, you know, special circumstances funding, you know, and just wanted to clarify that too.
So where does this group get the money?
It came through from ARPA funds.
I understand. Where does ARPA get the money?
Well, ARPA is the COVID relief funds that are coming to...
From the federal government.
From the federal government.
Okay. I mean, I'm asking because I don't know, and there are other people that watch. So saying ARPA to me means nothing, right?
Okay.
So there, I'm asking, like, where this money comes out of somewhere. Did City of Tukwila ask, oh, well, that's great, ARPA. By the way, where did the money come from to pay for the program? And you're saying it's COVID relief funds.
Yes,
right?
It's COVID relief funds.
Okay. And then the last question I have is, because the way I read it is, City of Tukwila pays for it up front and then submits a request to ARPA to get reimbursed. Is that right?
It's actually, we submit it back to OSPI and OSPI's Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction. And then AWC, which is Association of Washington Cities, are the two that we get the funding through. So we actually get reimbursed from them.
Okay.
ARPA gave them the money. They are distributing it to us. Then we get that back from them after we spend it.
Okay. So that entity, whoever's providing the money, you just put in a request like we had this many kids and it cost this amount. And they just cut a check back to Tukwila at some point, right? Something like that?
Yeah. Example, last year we did it was a much smaller grant. I just sent them a list from our finance department of our labor. We had the exact amount that we spent on labor, and I submitted my receipts for purchases that we made for the programs, and we got a check. It was actually only like 3 days after I submitted everything, so they turned it around very quickly.
Okay, so there's not like a huge like 6 months, year or whatever to get the money back.
Oh, no, okay. The end date of the contract is November 15th, and that means that we will be reimbursed no later than that date because we have to be done spending and submit our paperwork by September.
Perfect. Thank you, Chair. That's all I have. I appreciate John and Tracy. Thank you.
All right. Are there any further questions? I have none. Thank you. Memo was very straightforward and talks about how we will have a budget amendment at the end of the year. So when we see that, we'll know what that is for. I will report out on this tonight at our meeting, and it will be forwarded to the consent agenda tonight, actually. In 2 weeks, special meeting consent agenda. All right. Thank you so much.
Chair, I do have one more question. I'm sorry. Looking through my notes, I saw on page 23, there's a projected cost. I would like, it breaks down all of the fees. One fee says other for $35,250. So the two questions I have is, one, what is that number? And two, who comes up with the projected numbers? How do they come up with that? Is that just an estimate? Someone goes in from a historical standpoint and say, this is what it has cost us before. How does that work?
So I can answer part of that question, and I'm hoping Tracy will be able to help me out with the other part. So I actually put together the numbers for the first two programs, the Outdoor Rec and then the scholarship. Because those programs are starting from scratch, they are estimates. What I did was I tried to sit down and calculate it out. I did a little research of like what are some different trips that they could do, different costs. Then I figured out labor for thinking like an internship or higher level person to assist in setting the program. So I figured out an hourly and then to run the trips 2 to 3 a week. So that's where all those labor numbers came from, and then estimated supplies. Scholarship was a, honestly, it was a nice round number to shoot for. I was actually thinking they might come back and say, oh, how about 50? We got 100,000. I'm ecstatic. We can provide that to our Tukwila kids. Now, the ecology program was put together by Olena Perry. So I don't know exactly on those numbers. Tracy, can you take that one?
Yeah, I would say I don't exactly know what that other is, but I know that it was, the plan was to contract with these two other organizations and that the students in these would get paid for their time. So I can find some more information and follow up with you for that, what that other amount is.
Yeah, I'm not asking an unreasonable question. It's the highest number there. There should be something that it points to, I would think.
Yeah.
We're approving that this whole program, but, you know, for transparency, it would be nice to know what $35,250 pays for. That's where I stand. That's all I have. Thank you, Tracy.
Yeah,
and John.
Absolutely.
Thank you. All right. So, as I said, this will be moved on to the special meeting consent agenda on February 28th. No other questions, Councilmember Abdi? All right. On to item B, which is an interlocal agreement for fire investigation.
Good evening, council members. I'm Jay Whitware, the fire chief. I bring back to this committee the interlocal agreement memo. It really goes into a lot of detail. We did have a discussion about this a couple of weeks ago. We have met with the attorney for the city and actually have even met with Puget Sound Regional Fire Authority's legal and with their chiefs concerning this contract. And so that has been fully vetted by both legal divisions, and we bring this back to the committee. This is an interlocal agreement that addresses our fire investigation efforts that go on for the city of Tukwila, as well as the area that is serviced by Puget Sound Regional Fire Authority. So I want to be brief and really save time for any questions.
Right. So we had this presented to us on the 16th of January, and this is our update on the 24th. The request is that it goes to the COW on the 28th of February and then on to the March 7th regular meeting. And I will start with Councilmember Sharp with any questions that you have.
Chair, I don't have any questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Councilmember Abdi.
I don't have any questions as well. Thank you.
Chief, is there any new information that's in this memo other than what we saw before with the details about how it would be one of our staff members that would be down in at the Kent station or 57? I can't remember. Anyway.
Really no new information. What is new for the council is that you're actually getting the opportunity to look at the actual interlocal agreement, which is all defined throughout the memo. It just lays it all out. I do make a recommendation, though, that this goes to the Council of the Whole. When it does go before the Council of the Whole, I will have the Fire Marshal, Andy Nevins, will accompany me to the COW if there are any questions from the Council as a whole.
All right. Thank you so much. And we'll look forward to further discussion at that meeting. And are there any further questions from my fellow council members before we move to the next item? All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
The next item is an update on the Police Department Co-Responder Program. It looks like we've got a slide presentation from Jackie Harris. So welcome, Jackie.
Hello, am I heard?
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. I do not quite know how to share it, I'm going to be honest with you. This is the first time I've done this part. Is it just clicking the share content and then?
Yeah, so Jackie, if you click on the share content, it will then, you'll see a window drop down to then click on the window you want to share. And if you have sound associated with it, you have to click the button up on the top right. Otherwise, if there's no sound, just click on that window and you should be good. Just like that.
Thank you, sir. Fantastic. Okay. So I will try and make this as brief as I possibly can. I realize it's a new program, so I kind of wanted to give everyone as much information as I possibly could about what I have been doing thus far. And apart from that, if I could get questions at the end, that'd be great, so I can roll on through. So my name is Jackie Harris. I'm a mental health professional, and I have a licensed mental health counselor license, both within Washington. I have my master's in applied psychological sciences from Pacific University down in Oregon, and I've been in the behavioral health field for over 5 years, working in DV and as well as residential. It is a program that is partnered with Sound Health and the Tukwila Police Department. So the whole goal of the program is to take people who are nonviolent and put them in the hands of someone who can help them with what they're struggling with and divert them from going to the hospital or jails, and put them into places that they can possibly get better help, lowering those reoffense rates, introducing more resources around them and decreasing the amount of resource that the city would have to expend. So part of what I was looking at was how was a situation handled before I came in versus how it's handled now. Officers would often call the mobile crisis team, which is a fantastic resource. However, because they are so fantastic, their call volumes are high and their demand is very high. Sometimes waiting 2 to 3 hours for a team to come on out, the person's not going to sit there in the cold and the rain and the snow to wait for that. This left officers with no immediate resource and no offering. I can go ahead and deploy immediately, build a rapport with those community members, and help them with follow-up contacts and further communications as well. Officers would send someone to the hospital, possibly for a mental health evaluation, involuntarily. Sometimes that process would not work as we would hope, and they would not even see the social worker be out back into the streets again, and often continuing to have the same problem because nothing was actually talked about or fixed. I can write petitions and documentation that help the person be seen, evaluated by that social worker, as well as following up with someone after they've discharged, even if it was just for that 4 hours, following up with them, getting them some resources that maybe discharge planning didn't cover. Officers would have ongoing contacts with no long-term solutions for some community members. I have the resource information and contact to help connect community members with those resources, as well as community members were less likely to interact openly with police due to personal opinions or the situation that's just occurring. My dress code, job title, and connection with Sound have all shown to be an asset to de-escalate those situations and be more productive conversations about their needs and their goals and where they want to go. Officers have also had concerns over the new law implications on interactions with those in crisis. And my position is another form of de-escalation, which decreases the level of force needed during an interaction, gives them another step to go ahead and try and gives an option for our officers out there as well. My onboarding, I started it on August 1st in this position. We started with a couple weeks of logistic training, learning the ins and outs of the station, some program, just ins and outs of what programs are actually in the PD, learning together what I would need to help be effective in my job as well. I attended patrol tactics, radio, and police database specific trainings, as well as spent a lot of time riding along with police officers, learning some of the more secluded areas of Tukwila and looking at what calls I can also assist on. some statistics from the last 6 months. I look at contacts per days. It seems to be the best barometer for me at the moment, with not having too much data to go off of beforehand. So it's contacts of days that I have worked versus my total number of contacts for that month. As you can see, there's a steady increase. There was a bit of a dip with taking some time off and having a sickness. But overall, we're continuing to grow. And as I learn more about how I can help fit in and learn to make more suggestions and step up and take initiative and saying, I'm going to come on out with you, let's go. We're just growing in the amount of people that I'm contacting and recontacting in some instances. Some of my success stories, I worked with an individual who was struggling with substances, following up with them and their social supports, giving them substance use resources and treatment facility options. They did eventually enter voluntarily and are still working on their sobriety as last I have contacted. I collaborate and coordinate care and create warm handoffs with behavioral health agencies and community members, making sure that they're not alone and I'm not just giving them a number and saying, go ahead and call that person. I'll sit down and I'll call them with them to make sure that that connection really gets solidified. I've assessed an individual that needed acute level of care due to setting fires in the community, and I got them to their appropriate providers. I worked with a family of community members in crisis to get resources and explain the system that their beloved is now in. Sometimes family members don't always understand kind of what's going on. And so to have someone there who can handle that situation, but also take time to explain kind of what's going on and give a little bit of understanding helps a long way as well. I've worked with the counseling department at Foster High School to help teens in suicidal crisis get to a safer environment. And after working with the officers, an officer actually recommended an appropriate resource for a community member that they didn't know about prior to me starting and passed the case along to me and then came back and told me. So working with them is showing that they're learning resources and options as well. So it's an amazing opportunity to be able to provide this service to the city of Tukwila. I see improvements and changes in the community I've interacted with, as well as my peers here in the department. I've achieved multiple success stories in the last 6 months, and I hope to continue to grow this program to new heights and continue to serve this beautifully diverse community. Is there any questions?
So we will start. Well, thank you. First of all, thank you for this presentation.
You're welcome.
Very good, inspiring.
Sorry, I was talking quick, trying to fit in that 10-minute.
You did great, and I think it was very understandable. And so we have, we'll see what questions we have. We'll start with Council Member Abdi.
I just wanted to say thank you, Jackie, for informing us about this. It was very well put together, and as someone who's getting more familiar or more into, like, you know, the police department and things that you guys are doing in the community, and now we have mental health, you know, professional people such as yourself, it's very refreshing to hear, you know, things that you guys are into and, you know, the goals that you guys have for, like, the city and how to prevent, you know, more bad cases and helping the citizens. So all in all, I just really enjoyed the presentation. I enjoyed reading, you know, what you guys are about and what you guys get into. But at this time, I don't have any particular questions, but I do think it was really well put together. So thank you, Jackie.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Abdi. Councilmember Sharp, questions?
Yes. Thank you, Jackie, for the presentation. I didn't catch whether or not is this program exclusively to Tukwila, or do you perform these duties outside of Tukwila?
Nope. Currently, right now, it is just for the city of Tukwila, just within our area, city bounds.
Is there
sometimes
any other...
I need to follow up with someone if they live outside of Tukwila, just because we are a big hub. You know, some of my follow-up calls do end up being outside of Tukwila, but mostly it happens from a contact within the city of Tukwila. I deploy with the patrol unit.
Of course. Is there any other of these kind of programs
elsewhere within the state of Washington or Puget Sound area, or is this like exclusive, a new thing to Tukwila?
So it's a new thing to Tukwila. There are programs that are popping up in different areas. Quite a bit of cities have started. What is it? Down below, Des Moines is looking at starting up theirs. Renton was looking at starting up one. There's a couple different models of which co-responder programs are created. You can have someone who's directly embedded into the department. You can have a contract with a mental health or behavioral health company, and then you can have just a contractor for your city. It doesn't have to be with the police department. It can also be with the fire department. Kind of differences of how to deploy. So quite a bit of cities are kind of doing it in their own different ways, but those kind of seem to be the three models. But for Tukwila, currently right now, the programs for being able to respond like this would be the Mobile Crisis Unit or me. There is a program that DESC will be opening up, hopefully, I think, within the year, that will cover all of South King County. But again, when someone in Tukwila needs help, you're either relying on a resource that's spread amongst all King County, amongst South King County, or me, who can deploy quicker.
I understand. And so, well, if the fire department required your services, would you deploy with them, or are you exclusive with Tukwila PD?
Currently, I'm exclusive with the PD.
Okay.
I would hope that would be a growing point to be able to work on finding ways to help integrate that. But it is a pilot program for a year and then a reassessment to see if this is a program that would like to be continued.
Okay. And then I guess you're the only one on staff. Is that right?
Yeah. It's me.
Okay.
It is a one-woman show at the moment, but I have support from my supervisors at Sound and then my support here.
And then, so who do you report to? Who's your boss? I don't want the name of the person. I mean, is it South Sound, that organization you work for, or is it Tukwila PD is like your
boss? The person that signs my paycheck at the end of the day is Sound.
Okay.
So I have a direct supervisor at Sound, and then I also report under the commander of patrol here.
I see. And so we probably, and some of the next questions will be the Chief Griever can chime in because he might know more, but when you're having your conversation with, I'll just use them as citizens out in the world, right? Mm-hmm. Are officers present while you have your conversation with them?
Yes. Yep. I always deploy with at least one officer for our
safety. I mean, are they actually, when you're talking to them, I know they're there, but are they actually within hearing distance of you and whoever you're speaking with?
That depends on the situations that come up. Sometimes they do stand more back, and sometimes if things have been a little more rowdy or things are concerning, they may stand closer to be able to get safety to me quicker if something were to happen.
Okay, so the next question might be more appropriate for Chief Griever because he might know. If they're there standing there and that crisis victim is sharing, are officers allowed to gather or take notes regarding the conversation that they have with you?
So I think that's a dynamic question. So if the person is not being detained and they're free to go, that the information that's provided certainly would be subject to being written down or noted in a report. However, if the person is there associated with a crime, even though we're dealing with mental health, there's the potential that information would not be able to be utilized because they have a right to not self-incriminate, in which case they would have had to been Mirandized before information could potentially be utilized. The intent is not to intrude and try and provide Jackie or the MHP with whatever resources they need. And sometimes that's us not being there, but we also need to be cognizant of her safety. So the priority is the safety of all involved. And I am not aware of an incident where officers are then jotting down what the person's saying. The priority is the welfare of the individual and making sure that we are addressing their need. However, now that you brought that question up, I will bring it back to our staff and figure out, okay, what is going on and whether or not there are instances of where we have or find the need to document what's being said. I do not believe that there's anything legally that would prevent us. However, we want to be respectful of their privacy and the whole reason for us having an MHP on site anyways.
So if I'm hearing you right, officers can be present and can record or make notes. I mean, you're not aware of that happening, but what ultimately happens is if in this crisis situation, speaking with the specialist, they can make their situation worse from a legal or protection standpoint, because as they're confiding into with Miss Jackie here, they could say something that the officers can then act on potentially.
Yes. However, we also are recording. We've got our body cameras on. So I think it's something we need to explore with legal to determine whether or not, okay, should we be recording these things? Should we turn off our body camera? At what point are we infringing upon their rights?
Yeah, that would seem reasonable to me, because how does the person in crisis know that even though they're seeking this help, that there's a potential that they could say something that could make their situation worse for them in the long run? So are the folks that she encounters with law enforcement there made aware, or is it clear to them that they, whatever they do say, you know, what you say to normal people can and will be used against them at some point in the court of law? I mean, is that communicated with them when she shows up? Like,
well, usually, again, it's a dynamic situation. And if we're treating somebody for mental issues and are sending them to get treatment, we're not filing criminal charges. We wouldn't be able to use that, because they can't be held accountable for their actions if there are mental issues associated with it. So somebody in crisis could make an argument that they were not capable of understanding from right and wrong.
Okay.
So, a legal defense. And again, it gets back to providing the service. And quite honestly, I hadn't thought of that scenario, and it hasn't been brought up before in the meetings that I've been involved with. So I'd appreciate an opportunity to go back and explore with my admin and Jackie and, you know, how we can best make sure we're meeting the needs without infringing upon their rights when it comes to that. Because again, it comes down to the bottom line is their welfare and the safety of those that are there and responding. And if the recording or officers hearing what's being said infringes on that, we may have to reevaluate and assess how we go about doing this. I think it also lends towards reaching out to the other programs that are doing this to find out, okay, what are you doing? Has this been an issue? Has it come up as an issue as it relates to somebody's right to the Fifth Amendment rights? So give us a chance to explore that and get back to you on that. And, you know, this is one of the things that also gets explored in a pilot program, ironing these things out. So very constructive question. Thank you. I appreciate it.
I will say, Chief, that is something that I am working on, is connecting with other alternative response units or co-responders within the state and working at seeing how they interact and how their deployments do look and what happens on scene as well. So that's something I'm already looking at.
Perfect.
Just to help improve whatever program, you know, whatever I can do in our program.
Okay.
Thank you.
And then thank you both. The other question I had was, if this takes form, if this holds true, will this staff be still contracted out, or will it be part of Tukwila PD staffing, like on a permanent basis?
That that's for discussion moving down the road. We'll have to figure out what such a proposal would look like. Our intent would be to have that person staffed, putting them under us so that we have the ability to be flexible with that person's schedule, be having them respond under contract with whatever labor organization in order for us to best meet the needs of the position and the resource. So we don't have an answer for that yet. It's part of the pilot program for us to figure out what will work best for us moving forward, and us being the city.
And I asked the question because at some point when they're, if they go to what you ultimately want is a staffed individual, it plays to the very first kind of questions I asked. If they're an employee of the Tukwila Police Department, and there was something that transpired between the specialist and that potential citizen, there could be a sense where even though there's some protected information between the specialist and the individual, Tukwila PD could make a request on, like, what did you guys say? What was transpired? I thought I heard this. Did you hear that? And so it sort of violates that trust between the specialist and the citizen. I'm not saying that's happening. I'm saying that the potential opening for that could be there when there's that kind of, you know, they're under the same roof, like she will be working, or staff like herself will be working closely with law enforcement, as opposed to a contractor who is protected by their rules saying, hey, we work for South Sound Health. I understand we get paid by Tukwila PD or the city of Tukwila, but we have our rules. But once they're in-house, they ultimately answer to the same person, right? And so there could be a conflict. That's my comment. That's really a comment, really. So I know you don't know the answer to that, but that's my comment. And that's all I have. Thank you, Jackie. Thank you, Chief. I appreciate it, Chair.
Thank you. All right. Thank you for this report. We look forward to hearing more about this. And so is how long is this this pilot program until?
So it was for a year. I started on August 1st, so I would assume it would be to the end of July.
So probably reevaluated during the summer.
Yes.
Okay. Wishing this program every success because it sounds like it's off to a good start.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks again. And our next item on the agenda is a proposal for safe and sane fireworks. This is something new, and let me tell you how I'm going to go through this to begin with. So we have a report. We have some paperwork that's been submitted by the person that is proposing this, Katrina Doan, who most of us know. So what I'd like to do, just so you can know what the format I'm looking at, is to do the presentation by Laurel, and then and hopefully you had a chance to read this. It's very straightforward how this goes, and also Ms. Doan has had a chance to talk to most of us about it, so we understand some things about it. So the next thing I'll do is ask the chief for their inputs, because that'll be something new for us that we haven't had, to see what their thoughts are on it, the fire and the police chief. And then I'll be asking for council questions, and then after that I will be having Katrina maybe address some of the things that we've talked about, not maybe, but Katrina address some of the things that we've talked about. So let's start with a presentation with Laurel.
Thank you, Chair. Good evening, council members. I'll be brief, but the City Council recently received a request that you consider modifying your municipal code relating to fireworks. On January 3rd, Council President McLeod got consensus to send this question through the committee process. And starting on page 45 of your packet, there's background about the request, which is that instead of the total ban on all fireworks that currently exist, you consider making it legal to sell and use certain types of ground-based fireworks. These are often called safe and sane, and they include things like sparklers, ground flowers, fountains, smoke balls, and things that pretty much do not project into the air or explode. And the packet includes on page 47 the proposal written up by Ms. Doan, and on page 49 the Mount Vernon Municipal Code, so you can see an example of a city that has this law in place. Pages 57 through 59 are just some outreach material to show a pictorial of the types of fireworks distinctions that we're talking about, as well as how some cities promote this program. And if the committee wishes to pursue this modification, we would need to prepare an ordinance and bring it back through the legislative process. You've received quite a few recent emails in favor of this amendment, but if you wish to move forward to relax the law, I would recommend some additional outreach to get to residents who may not know this is being considered. And with that, I'll turn it back to the chair to facilitate the discussion. I encourage you to take advantage of having the police and fire leadership in the meeting so they can provide their insights. Thank you.
All right, let's start with fire chief, because we associate fireworks with fire. So Chief Whitworth, could you give us some of your comments regarding changing to this type of firework being allowed into the city?
I will. So I am pleased to be able to share our thoughts from the fire department. I have had some conversations with my team and also some of my contemporaries in the Puget Sound area. What we have found is there was an intent to tighten up fireworks policies across the region. Now, that has been in place for well over a decade. From my point of view, strictly, it has not accomplished what our intentions were. What we have found is that folks still want to celebrate, the 4th of July, and thus they are into celebrating with their families, and they go out and purchase fireworks that aren't safe and sound. And that's our busiest day of the year, is 4th of July, responding to incidences. Generally, it's flying type of fireworks that cause the problems, and those are not considered safe and sound. So we are definitely open to listening to what is being offered, and hoping that this may slow the purchase and use of the flying type of fireworks that we all too often see on the 4th of July and the few days leading up and following the 4th of July as well. So I will be brief with my comments. And are there any questions for me?
So we'll start with Councilmember Sharp. Questions for the
Well, I guess I just have questions about the program. I don't know if it's necessarily the chief of fire that can answer the question. So I'll just wait till the end when we get to general questions. Thanks.
Councilmember Abdi, anything specifically that you want to ask the police chief, keeping in mind that we will be having more discussion about the program in general? Fire chief.
No questions. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So then let's go on to the police chief Drever and hear your comments and make questions, comments. The floor is yours.
Yeah, for the police department, we've been asked each year to heighten our patrols on 4th of July and around 4th of July to address the ignition of fireworks. And the problem for us just falls into, in order for us to cite or actually do anything aside from just moving people along and asking them to stop, is we have to actually witness somebody igniting a firework in order for us to cite somebody for it. And either that or be in possession of illegal fireworks. So trying to actually pinpoint and provide probable cause for a specific individual, it's beyond impossible. If you look, we haven't been able to cite anybody in the last couple of years. Now, that being said, we adhere to the ordinance, and as we come across neighborhoods, we get reports of fireworks being lit off. We will come in. We will see people celebrating, not necessarily people lighting fireworks off. We may see remnants of fireworks, but we'll reach out to them and pass on this, what the rules are and whether or not, or just letting them know that they're not to be lighting off fireworks, that it is part of the city ordinance, that it's not, fireworks are banned within Tukwila. We have no real way of enforcing it as it goes. That being said, every year we can hear fireworks going off. We still have people that are not taking the law into consideration or the ordinance into consideration. And so for us, we are fine responding any way the city needs us to address the issue. I don't see the ban having worked for the city in the past. And so exploring other options as to how we can go about celebrating the 4th of July is certainly within the purview of the city, and we would be supportive of the changes that are being offered up.
Okay, so let's start with, I think, Council Member Abdi. Forgive me if I'm starting with somebody twice. So these are questions that we have that are for Chief of Police Drever. And then we'll move, and general questions will come. Do you have any for Chief Drever?
No questions for Chief. Thank you.
Okay. How about you, Councilmember Sharp? Any specific questions for the police chief?
Only as far as you had alluded to enforcement, how difficult it is. I'm just using the flyer. There's a flyer that I showed. It's in this packet. It says, why is it legal? Why is it safe? And it's kind of a guide from the city of Mount Vernon. You're probably seeing it, looking at it. It says something about fireworks purchased within the city limits. So to me, that's just another task for your officers to have to go out there on a call, that even if they roll to a call where fireworks are legal, this one little line forces them to ask the question of citizens, like, where'd you get it? So to me, the question is, in your opinion, does that need to be in there as far as like part of the ordinance or the rule governing fireworks? Like, you know what I mean? Like, you, that very line, if that was in an ordinance, puts your officers in a position where they now have to ask the question, did you buy that within the city of Tukwila? And now there's a problem. So it's already an issue for you guys to roll out with the limited resources you have. But in your opinion, is that something that needs to be in this ordinance? Can't hear you.
Sorry about that. It depends. The burden of proof is upon the city to prove that they didn't purchase them within the city. So we could ask, but all they have to do is say yes. They don't have to prove to us that they purchased them in the city. And they have no obligation to assist our investigation. So it's only problematic from a sticking point for if we don't Mirandize somebody and we ask them where they got it and they told us and then we act on it, then it becomes problematic if the person didn't know they had. And that's not the problem, becomes the Miranda warning and somebody knowing their rights versus the actual ordinance. So I don't necessarily see it being problematic, although I think the reality of it is people are going to be lighting off fireworks from outside of a purchase out of Tukwila. They just will. So I don't know that it's realistic. However, I don't see it problematic for us being able to enforce something, because we're just not going to be able to enforce that aspect of being able, having to have them prove that they purchased them within the city.
So to me, if it's something that, I'm not going to put you on the spot, but if the city of Tukwila is put in a position where they can't enforce a particular part of a law, essentially, why even have it in there, right? So that would be my comment. You don't have to answer to that, because, you know, you sit in a different seat. But from my perspective, if law enforcement already has problems enforcing just that rule, having something in there that puts them on the spot to go further doesn't seem necessary. Everything else seems good with me, except the one where it says, like, where you bought them. Because if I'm an officer, I don't really care as long as they're not shooting the wrong fireworks. I don't care where they bought them, but that's me. So if I get it, if I'm catching you right, I mean, to me, it just doesn't seem like it's necessary to be in any ordinance. And that's my comment. You could respond if you like, but that's where I sit. And then I have other questions, but that's all for you, Chief. Thanks.
Well, I think there are other people in on this call that might have a better, do a better job responding to that. So I'll let them do so if they feel it's appropriate.
Okay. Well, thank you, everyone, for the comments so far. I want to remind you that what staff is seeking is council direction on the next steps. So that's where we're going with this, what those next steps will be. So Ms. Doan, would you like to just add some information here? I think we all have read this, but give us like the points that you really want to emphasize, and then we'll ask you some questions. And you're still on mute.
Thank you so much for letting me join you tonight, and thank you, Councilmember Sharp and Councilmember Abdi, for considering this, what could be a very monumentous change that could make a huge difference in our community. This came out of a conversation with the athletic director in the high school, and the idea grew from there as we realized what a difference this could make across our community, not just the high school, by making a change that can also potentially solve some other problems that people have had surrounding this issue. As the chiefs have said, I've never heard anybody say, oh, the ban on fireworks has worked. It hasn't. And giving people the opportunity to have access to safer fireworks that are shown to not cause the fireworks problems give us a unique out-of-the-box way of looking at this and meeting the needs of a wide range of our community who have expressed frustration with fireworks. I've had countless conversations with people, and when I dig a little deeper, when people say, I hate fireworks, tell me about what you hate. And I think I can almost use the word every time. It's been the same two things. I hate things that go boom and are loud, and I hate the things that fly around and I'm afraid they're going to set my house on fire. And I agree. And that's why I love this proposal, because for those folks, those things are still illegal. Nothing changes. Yet we know that families love to celebrate, and we're giving them an option to go buy something that is safe. And most people, you know, there's still going to be people, as somebody said, there's still going to be people that are going to go get some dangerous ones. I'm not going to say it's going to stop it. But most people will buy what is close. And this kind of ties into your question, Councilman Sharp. I think what that line was saying in Mount Vernon is that all items sold in the city, and I need to read the exact wording, all items sold within the city would be legal. So anybody who goes to a location in Tukwila and buys fireworks will know that whatever they purchase is approved. Now, they can also get ground-based fireworks. You know, maybe they're on their way home from work and they stop in Auburn, which also sells safe and sane fireworks. I think the intent of that was to say that whatever is sold in that city would be legal, and those would be the legal items, rather than you can only purchase them. And I'll pull up my screen and check that again in a moment. But I believe that was the intent of that line. Auburn uses a phrase that I think helps mark the delineation and would help the police with this. Auburn's line is, if it goes up or blows up, it's illegal in Auburn. And there's your clear cut. You know, if somebody sees somebody lighting a firework that goes up way high and does its thing, we know it's illegal. If you hear a big kaboom that rattles the windows, we know that's illegal. So I believe that was the intent of that line. Does that make sense or help? So, and lots of communities starting to look at this. I think the pendulum is shifting, and Tukwila is really being a leader in stepping out and taking it to the point of looking at possibly changing our legislation. So I would be glad to answer any questions from my perspective, why I put this forward, any details.
All right. Let's see, Councilmember Sharp, did you have any further questions about for Katrina or and then we'll go to Councilmember Abdi.
Well, I appreciate it. We had a conversation about this, Katrina, so I'm all for it. The only thing it opens my mind to the possibility of why not make the fireworks, those type of fireworks, just legal year round, as opposed to just fireworks for the 4th of July, because there are going to be folks that want to celebrate New Year's or a wedding or a bar mitzvah or whatever kind of celebration, right? The little Twizzler, you know, the little sparkler things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just why don't we just make those legal, because they don't impact anybody negative, right? And so instead of having that neighbor that wants to call in on their neighbor, the neighbor they don't like, for every little thing, like, hey, it's July 3rd, and or it's 1 week after you violate, why not just make it a legal thing since it doesn't impact anybody? That would be my only observation as far as this particular ordinance. So no matter when you fired them, at any time, since they don't bother anybody, why not just make it a legal thing in Tukwila? As far as the rest of it goes, I'm totally for that. I'm totally for this new ordinance or law or revision of the law. So that was my only comment. It's not really a question. It's just a comment, really.
Actually,
so thank you.
Can I respond to it, though? It's one that's come up in a lot of settings, and it's a really good one. It is a state law. There's a state fireworks law that is the umbrella law, and then cities have to abide by the state law. They can tighten things, but they can't go outside of the state law. And right, the current state law only allows fireworks for the 4th of July, and they are allowed at New Year's. But I'd like to look back. I don't know what year that was written. I think it was written probably prior to being more aware of a lot of the different cultures that are in our area. I've had a couple of really neat conversations with people about Lunar New Year and all of the different, Diwali and Eid and different celebrations that folks in our community have, that I would love to make these available in a safe way. It would take action at the state level to get that umbrella law that we have to follow changed to allow that. They can use there's non-fire items, party poppers and blowers, which are often sold in tents. Those are allowed year-round, but any of the fire items currently under state law, we are not able to make available. And I would sure like to see that change. So I think that's a great, great question. I think it's one that's especially applicable here in Tukwila.
I guess the question I would have for somebody, whoever's an expert on all laws, is there a way to just ban those bad fireworks? Just ban that, and then leave out when or how it's enforced, so that if Officer Friendly shows up, he's like, well, yeah, I guess the state says it's banned, but like, there's no law I need to really kind of like do enforce here, because in the city of Tukwila, there's nothing that states win as far as the city of Tukwila. If they were going to get in a conversation, well, I get that the state says there's this window, like you mentioned, Katrina, mm-hmm. but like, as far as I'm concerned, man, I don't have a law. There's nothing on the city of Tukwila books that forces me to say that your Chinese New Year is invalid and you shouldn't be shooting it now or using those now. So I'm just going to walk this way and call it good. So I don't know. That's not up to you, Katrina. I mean, that's for legal to determine, but maybe there could be some kind of where we don't have to state when, so that it leaves it sort of gray, so that folks like who from other cultures can use these particular fireworks to celebrate what's important to them, you know, because maybe 4th of July they're not into, but there might be something they're into, right? So I just don't want it to limit it. So
my neighbors want to celebrate every Seahawks touchdown. They would have that written into the law.
That's right.
Because so, they saved their fireworks for every Seahawks touchdown.
Thank you.
Yes, very, very, very well taken point. Thank you, Councilmember Sharp.
Okay, we still have questions from Councilmember Abdi. I do want to remind us we've got 9 minutes actually left, and we need to come to next step. No pressure, Councilmember Abdi. Put that on.
I just want to say thank you, Katrina, and Councilmember Tosh. I was taking a lot of, notes, of this topic, and you guys kind of covered everything that I was curious about, so I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so I'm going to ask my fellow council members, you are amenable to this moving forward, is because the question is, again, next steps, and the next step would be to move this forward. And so if I get head nods from you, then I will say we'll go into the how. Okay, so I've got the yes. So now I'm going to go back to Laurel and ask you what next steps would be in typical for something like this. Where are we at?
Sure. So I'm hearing committee interest in pursuing this. The next step would be drafting an ordinance, vetting it through all of the proper channels, including our city attorney, scheduling it for legislative action, which would be a return to this committee, and then committee of the whole, and then a regular meeting. Depending on the timelines, if you had any particular reason to shorten any aspect of that, we can talk about the schedule. But typically, it would have that three-touch rule, and looking at the calendar, I think the earliest you could see it back here would be March 14th committee.
Okay, so let's talk about that a little bit more. We were talking about outreach to the community. So where would that go? Where would that happen along the way? So if we've got drafting an ordinance, so would it go to the COW, or would we draft the ordinance and come back to committee? I kind of got lost there.
Oh, sure. So drafting an ordinance, vetting it through the internal channels, and bringing that ordinance back to committee, unless you had some reason to want to bypass committee at that point. And then I think you were asking about community outreach. I don't have our communications deadlines in front of me, but I think putting some advertisements in our channels like social media and the eHazelnut or Hazelnut, something to the effect of the city council is considering a modification to the fireworks ban to allow, we'll figure out the wording and then what do you think, something along those lines. So we would just hit every channel we could during that process.
Okay, so you'd be doing that simultaneously with drafting the ordinance?
I could.
Okay. So I understand that there is something that's time sensitive. I want to make my fellow council members aware of that. Katrina, can you quickly explain that to me?
We would love to move forward as fast as is legally possible, because we would love to have this passed so that we can have this happen this year. I'm really excited about the financial infusion for our nonprofit groups. And what happens on the other end of it after it's passed by a city is the fireworks company would then look for a site, which would involve conversations with property owners, securing a site, securing a lease, signing contracts with nonprofit groups. So there's a little bit of paperwork on the other end. So I would just say sooner is better. I'll just leave it at that. Anything that can happen on the front end would be super helpful. Anything that can happen concurrently would be helpful.
Okay. So here's my question for Laurel. The one thing that we could do that is if instead of coming back to committee, we brought the ordinance to the COW, is there any problems with that or issues with instead of coming back to committee first, since the committee is supportive of it, that it goes to COW? That would save.
That can be your preference. If that were the case, then I'm not going to promise, but potentially it would then go to the March 14th Committee of the Whole, and then you would cut a couple of weeks. Now, if you are if they, I would want to make sure the council feels that sufficient public input has been collected. Mm-hmm. So that would be one disadvantage of expediting the process.
So what I was thinking, because I did go through this and look at the dates, that's exactly what I had, was instead of coming back to committee, that it would go to the COW on the 14th. But we could do the same thing at COW as we would do here, and then make sure that we've had sufficient input from the community. It would just be at the COW rather than at this committee. Or we could work on that detail also. I'm reluctant to like make a promise that that's going to happen, but we could work towards that. That sounds mm-hmm. reasonable, Laurel, that we would work towards that as being the process.
Sure, we could. And just to clarify, when I was making, expressing a little bit of hesitation about the public outreach, if you're going to expedite and bypass committee, the Community Services and Safety Committee, then you're effectively shaving off 2 weeks before the final adoption. So that's what I meant. The window of time is shrunk. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you say, but we could do the, I think the amount of community outreach shouldn't be concatenated. It should be whatever it is, but maybe we could start it now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's what I'm thinking. So,
and then there's a couple of conversations to have. For example, the state law for the amount of time that fireworks can be sold is June 28th through July 4th. There are some cities who have shortened it to the 1st through the 4th. I don't know that we need to or want to go there, but would we want to stay within the state guideline, which is what most communities do, but there is that option just to...
Okay. So I'm going to go back to Laurel, since she's our person that does the logistics. Do you have any suggestions moving forward? Have we given you enough, like, we want to do public outreach, we want to just shorten that 2 weeks by going straight to COW rather than back to the committee, since there's no objections from committee members. Is that enough information for you, Laurel?
Yes, I think so. I recommend possibly reporting out on this conversation at tonight's committee of the whole so that the council knows it's coming, and the community as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I just to let you know, I have had quite a few conversations out in the community because I wanted to assess, I know I would love to see this happen, but I wanted to see what the reaction is. And so there has been some started and some people who are ready to put it on social media. There's been some foundations laid on that with some of our social media sites and some different folks.
Excellent. All right. So, Councilmember Sharp and Councilmember Abdee, does that sound good to you? What the plan is, and okay. And so, we'll do the best that we can to move this forward and expediently. And I did explain to Ms. Stone earlier that sometimes things can go sideways, mm-hmm. but in the best scenario, that's how it would work.
And you all know how to get a hold of me if I can help in any way, in any of the details of writing the revision. I'm happy to give input and have some copies of other communities' legislation as well.
Thank you.
Thank you all of you. I appreciate you considering this.
Thank you, Katrina. You're
welcome. Mm-hmm. I have no miscellaneous, any miscellaneous from my fellow council members. All right, then we are adjourned, and I will see you at 7 o'clock.